2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock.
Around the world, echo the news. Russia had blasted a man-made moon into outer space.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Well, I'm not a crook.
I learned it by watching you.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We are calling it iPhone.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
I am inevitable.
Alright, welcome back. This is Care Bear coming at you from Growing Up Atari again for another mini episode. So maybe this is episode 1.2 or 1.3. I don't remember what I named the last episode. It is another day in quarantine. I'm coming at you again from my front office, so the sound quality is going to be as fantabulous as the last one. I apologize for that. This is a part of my release outlet for being quarantined. You know, we're all suffering in the same ways. Everybody has to be stuck at home unless you're one of the brave firefighters, policemen, hospital workers, doctors that are battling to help keep us all safe. Today we're going to Today we're going to talk about the Atari flashback. I just want to chat about it a little bit. Like I said, it's a mini episode, so it's going to be really quick. But so the Atari flashback, it's a retro flashback version of the Atari. It was released in 2004. The first one was. There's been several versions of it. It looked like the Atari 7800, which in this man's humble opinion is kind of weird due to the more famous consoles, console of Atari being the 2600. I mean, hell, I bet you more people would recognize the 5200 over the 7200. But nonetheless, it went out with the style of the 7800. Maybe they knew that they were going to release Flashback 2 and 3 and so forth, and they thought that if they went with the 7800 first, then everybody wanting to remember their childhood that knows that iconic 2600 look would buy the second one and they'd sell more models. I don't know. Regardless, it came out the 7800 style. Other than being smaller, which seems to be sort of a flashback trend, whether it's an Atari, Sega, Nintendo, or any other retro console, they tend to make them like miniature. Main difference in the Atari flashback in the original system, other than being smaller, was that the games were all built into it. It took no cartridges. There were 20 games built into the system. Even though the system was modeled after the 7800, out of the 20 games that were built into the system, I believe the majority of them were 2600 games. You know, I also want to point out in these mini-series, I'm pairing my podcast up with a drink. And so the podcast I did a couple days ago, I paired up a dirty martini. Today it's a glass of orange juice, just pure orange juice. I felt like orange juice is the drink of my childhood almost, so I went with it since we're doing a flashback. So I just wanted to point that out. I'll try to remember to point that at the beginning from now on if I can. Not that anybody cares what I drink, but to hell with it, I'm going to mention it anyway. Alright, so there were some games that originally required the paddle controllers, which anybody from my generation could tell you were the kind of weird controllers with the wheel that you turned on top. They were configured to work with the joystick, games like Breakout and Warlords that are on this console. Atari veteran Kurt Vendel, who was part of the book Atari Inc. Business for Fun, was given the rights, or his company was, to create the first Flashback. He was only given a few months. They wanted it out before Christmas of 2004. So Kurt's company, and I'm going to murder this name, Syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y company. They used a NES on a chip style of technology, kind of to recreate the games. They did a pretty good job. There is a slight difference in sounds and a little bit different color from the original ones. Any of the real purist Atari nerds were kind of unhappy about that. The Atari Flashback 2 sort of resolved that problem, kind of back more to old Atari tech. A lot of people convert the Flashback 2s to actually take a cartridge as well. That kind of made the purist happy. So let's talk about games. It included 20 games. I won't go through all of them. Adventure, Air Sea Battle, Battle Zone, Crystal Castles, Millipede, Warlord, Jar's Revenge, Haunted House. To kind of name a few, it was one of the first Flashback consoles that I remember seeing in the store, but I don't know. I don't want to say it was the first because then I'm going to have people telling me I'm wrong. So we're just going to talk about one game on the system because it's one of my favorites. It's the first game on the system when you turn it on. There's a screen that looks like stacks of Atari cartridges, and you kind of scroll down and it tells you what game it is. The game that is the first one is Adventure. So anyone like myself that's a big fan of the movie Ready Player One knows that the Adventure video game was developed by a man named Warren Robinette for the Atari VCS, later called the 2600, of course. You know, as a player, you control an avatar whose quest is to explore kind of an open-ended maze of castles, and you have to find a magical golden chalice and return it to the Golden Castle. There's three castles. There's a Black Castle, a White Castle, and, of course, the Golden Castle, which is where the chalice goes. You have to avoid enemies. There's three dragons in the game. And you also have to avoid, there is a really annoying bat that steals your items from you. And it's, he's really insane. So, Adventure introduced a number of new gaming elements to the home console system. It included areas that spanned multiple screens, enemies that would continue to work off screen. So, for instance, your bat wasn't just on the screen you're on, kind of moved around. Also, as anyone who, like I said before, is a fan of Ready Player One, they know that the Adventure creator is credited with one of the first Easter eggs in a game. I'll let the motorcycle go by. showing his name in the game. So you can find that. That's kind of a fun challenge to find. It's also considered to be, if not the first, definitely one of the first action-adventure slash fantasy games for a home console. The artwork for Adventure, I believe, was done by Susan Jekyll, J-A-E-K-E-L, butchering names, I'm sure. The box was an orange kind of cereal-type box, I believe, if I remember correctly. I saw the artwork in the book Art of Atari. I had it as a kid, but I can't remember, you know, that many years back. But it had a castle up in the upper right-hand corner of the artwork, a hedge maze down below, with a dragon that was kind of weaved in and out of the maze, and he was holding up a key, representing the keys that you have to find to unlock the castles. There's a road heading down to the castle from the castle to the maze, and it looks like there's a couple of small little men, maybe elves or something, heading down that way. So it's really kind of a role-playing game. put into a video game system. And like I said, it's credited as one of the first, if not the first, fantasy games for a home console. Like I said before, you're an avatar. I believe you're supposed to be one of those little elves that's walking on the screen. You're a little square dot. And you move in through mazes. There's a sword, which is, just looks like a little golden arrow. And you need to get that sword, and you need to kill the dragons, collect the white key to unlock the white castle, collect the black key to unlock the black castle, and the golden key to unlock the golden castle. Once you've done that, slayed the dragons, found the golden chalice, you bring it back to the golden castle, and you win. The interesting thing about adventure is level one is very easy. There's no bats, for instance. There's no bats. The dragons seem to move slower. I don't know if that's just because there's no bats and it's less annoying. The keys are easy to find, and it's legitimately, there's one maze you really have to go through. Oh, I should say there's also a bridge that you can move around, because there's parts of the maze you have to get to that you can't get to because it's blocked off, so you have to move that bridge around to cross over it. But you can pretty easily, in level one, within just a few minutes, get the castle key to the golden castle and open it up, and then find the castle key to the white castle, kill the dragons. And I believe in the black castle is usually where the golden chalice is, or always where it is. You can bring it back to the golden castle and win the game. Level 2 gets a little more difficult. It introduces that annoying bat. And the dragons seem a little harder. And there's a section of maze you have to go through that's invisible. So your dot has kind of a yellow, it's sort of like Haunted House, but it's just a square sort of yellow. That's your light, and it kind of shows, you know, just a little bit around you where the maze is. But it's beatable, but it's much, much more difficult. And that's kind of something that Atari had in a lot of their games. Like, the first level was super easy to beat, and then the second level got significantly harder. And then the third level, even harder still. And I think they were trying to appease to multiple age groups, you know. But it's a fun game. I don't remember having, in a lot of our games, we had a notebook that had high scores and things like this. A lot of games like this, we would do on a time to see who was the fastest. I don't remember having this in the book. If it was in the book, you know, maybe I wasn't that good at it, and that's why I don't remember. But I certainly have a lot of fun playing it. It's one of those games that's really just about playing. You know, it's not about winning, because you move through these mazes, and you know, you get something, and then that bat takes it away, and then you got to go get something else to trade for the bat, and because you can't just take something from the bat. You have to, if he takes the key to the White Castle, and you need to get in the White Castle, you need to go get the sword. Then find the bat, bump him off, giving him the sword, you taking the key, and then going back to where you were. And it can be really, really annoying, but it also can be a lot of fun. So I have a, you know, and I didn't grow up playing a lot of role-playing games. My oldest son plays D&D, and him and his buddies get together. They haven't gotten together in a couple weeks. I think this quarantine's really killing them, but they get together about once a month, or once a week, I'm sorry, I should say, and they play a session of D&D, and it's a lot of fun, or they seem to have a lot of fun. I don't know, I don't play it, but regardless, I never really played that, but I do have one story that I remember. There used to be a comic book store, and I forgot the name of it. It was on Massachusetts Street here in Lawrence, and it was owned and run by a man named Stu. I was in there one time buying some comics, and I'm bent down flipping through comics, and this guy walks in, and I hear him talking, and he's describing this fight. And, I mean, it sounds completely epic. And I'm, first of all, not to judge a book by its cover, but most of the people, including myself, that were in this comic book store were definitely on the level of nerdy. I don't even know if I can consider myself a nerd. I'm not quite, more and more of a dork. I'm not quite cool enough to be a nerd. But regardless, it was just interesting because I'm thinking, well, this guy was in a fight, and it seemed massive. And he's explaining what he did. I mean, he was clearing out the house. And then he jumped up on this chair to continue to explain. And he was like, and then the dwarves came out. And, you know, and then he starts, you know, really describing the characters in detail. And within a few seconds, I realized he was talking about a role-playing game that they were playing. And the battle was super epic. So, these games, people cut their teeth on these games. They're important to them. You know, I don't know if people should make fun of people the way they do sometimes. I'm a sports fan, and I don't see it being any different than a football game or a basketball game. So, you know, to me, it's something that we need to respect a little more, I think, in our society. And I think it's become more respectful over time. But anyway, I'm not going to actually play the game or have a cut to the game. But, you know, I did play it. I played it for the last couple of days with my son to kind of get a feel of it. We've had a great time. It was frustrating at times and fun at times. And we got through all three mazes. We unlocked Warren Robinette's name and, you know, did all the good fun stuff. So, let me leave you with this quote. It's a role-playing game quote that I heard somebody say one time. They said a 20-sided dice in the center of the table and quoted Han Solo, "Never tell me the odds." So we're going to end it with that. I'm going to drink my orange juice. I want everybody to stay safe. Stay quarantined until we no longer need to stay quarantined. And remember, we're all in this together. All right, good night.